We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Heat Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas, and with me today is my boy, Ro, from SI Now, Rohan Nadkarni. What's up, my man?
I'm doing great, Gianni. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. We are public enemy number one right now, so of course we have to get us together.
Yeah, man, the two of us got to band together. The people are fed up with us, man.
It's cold out here in these streets. You know, it's funny. You build up a lot of goodwill. I'm yelling at the camera. I'm saying dumb shit. I'm saging arenas. And, you know, your goodwill's done when you say, you know, you kind of like Al Horford and drop. And all of a sudden, everyone's mad at you.
I think people expect me to be like a bigger Heat cheerleader than I am. Like, it's funny. I bet like people in the industry are like, why does this guy talk about the Heat so much? And then Heat fans are like, why aren't you talking about the Heat more? And it's like,
Cortez.
I can't win. Yeah, they want me to be Cortez. I can't be Cortez. They're paying me specifically not to be Cortez. So unfortunately, like, I can't be Cortez as much as I would like to. As much as I would like to join everyone in all of the slander of different cities, etc. If they win the title, I'll go full cocky Heat fan. But until then, like, you know, the reason why I'm watching all those random regular season games during the season, the reason why I'm watching Celtics Magic on a Tuesday night instead of being with my friends or family is so I can hopefully have an informed opinion this time of year.
And listen, you do a great job, and you know, real ones know. Everyone's gonna give a shit anyway because it's more fun.
It's true, jokes over facts.
It's the playoffs. This is what we got to do. Chat's already saying we need to sage this episode. Yeah, they're not happy. But we're gonna make it up to you. We're gonna talk about how good the Heat were yesterday, because there was a lot to talk about today. Also, if you're here and you want to listen, we're doing this cool thing with this app. I don't even think it's an app. It's a website called Playback. And the link's in our Twitch chat, twitch.tv/MIAHeatBeat, if you're a pod listener and you want to join in on what we do. If you're a YouTube viewer and you want to kind of join in live, you know, we see the comments and you know that you guys are into it, so come on here live. But for the first half of Warriors Mavs, we're going to watch the first half of Warriors Mavs together with you guys, the audience. So come on, join us. We have a good time. We make jokes. Last time, Kenny, Alf and I reviewed products in commercials. They were like these paid commercials it was like a Ziploc, but like one of those like vacuum Ziplocs. We were reviewing that product because it was like a really long infomercial. So we do fun stuff, even during timeout. So come join us. Links in the chat. Chat's asking if I've collected my guts a little bit. I feel a lot better. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about what Miami did specifically. So, Ro, that first 10 minutes went about, first like 5 minutes, went about as bad as you expected. Mm-hmm. A lot of turnovers, a lot of sloppy play. I don't like this kind of analysis, but I really just feel like Miami didn't have edge like they used to. Mm-hmm. I thought they weren't sharp. I thought part of that was Spo played a lot of weird three-guard lineups or two-guard lineups plus Caleb, and that really went away in the second half. But what did you make of, like, really the start and then how they kind of progressed into what happened in the third quarter.
So something I picked up on, I watched Bo's post-game press conference, and I've been in Phoenix following that. I was following that Dallas-Phoenix series, and something Jay Crowder said a couple times during that series, and as we know, Jay Crowder spent time in Miami, he said, what I love about the playoffs is that sometime scheme becomes less important, and it becomes so that mano-a-mano battle. You know, it's can you guard the guy in front of you? Spo used the same phrase in his post-game press conference. He said, you know, there's going to be, you know, he said something along the lines of like, the idea that you can just guard guys mano-a-mano with no help is ridiculous, but that's a part of the playoffs. And I think something, like, I'm with you. Like, there's something to be said about attitude and edge and physicality and focus, which I think it comes back down to focus that I think the Heat didn't have. They didn't meet the level they needed to in the first half. But something that I think really changed from the first half into the second half is they won the one-on-one battles. I think the first half, no matter who was in front of Jason Tatum, whether it was Jimmy Butler, PJ Tucker, whoever he got on the switch, he was beating that person into the paint. And I think where their turnaround started, it was stopping the dribble penetration, stopping the middle drives into the paint. And that's something I think we definitely saw from the first half going into the second half.
That's their identity. And, you know, Nikias had made a tweet. It's like the ESPN halftime show is talking about Heat's offense when they had a really good half-court offensive rating, and it was really their defense that let them down. And that is 100% right. Their MO all year has been limit attempts at the rim by product of switching, by loading up on the ball, and that just went out the window. There was a – I tweeted out a possession where Tatum, it was he had put Gabe in the pick and roll, and then like Caleb – or it was Dedmon and Caleb in the pick and roll, and Dedmon's in a drop. Caleb fights over the screen. He goes over – and Tatum recognizes this and attacks that. And then you have Dedmon in a drop, Caleb recovering. Hero kind of comes in to dig on the drive, which, by the way, I thought Hero was fantastic defensively, kind of just played his part.
I think it was probably Hero's best game of the playoffs, all things considered.
Oh, I thought it was one of his best defensive performances. Not that he's a stopper, but he literally did his job perfectly. And I think that he did a great job of kind of like hedging and recovering and all that stuff. But regardless, Tatum was walking into layups, and that was I tweeted out that I was a possession of like he's seeing two guys max, and then like any third guy is like just Hero kind of stunting and coming back out. Then in the second half, they come out and it's PJ at the level, Bam's meeting him there, and Jimmy is cheating off his man and loading up on wherever Tatum is, and I like when they bet on guys beating them with playmaking. And I thought the Celtics in the first half, they were trapping Hero. And I thought Tyler did a pretty good job of kind of beating that. But they were execution testing Hero. And I thought Miami finally said, all right, let's execution test Tatum. Make these passes and force us to play you one-on-one rather than just letting him play one-on-one, which I thought was a huge difference.
For sure. And that's a good point. And that's one of those things, though. It worked this game. Obviously, you know, Udoka's going to watch the film. Tatum's going to watch the film. They're going to make the adjustments. I'm interested to see how that holds up for an entire series, but I think that's a great point. Like, they were really loaded up on him in the second half. I mean, obviously, they got all those steals. Struess came in, got that big steal and score going the other way. They did a really good job of, as you said, making him see bodies, finding the right guys to kind of cheat off of, and then doing a good job of closing out, you know, getting back out onto the shooters. I thought, you compare it to what Milwaukee does. Milwaukee and Miami both give up a ton of threes, but I don't think Milwaukee was disciplined or committed to the closeouts on someone like Grant Williams in the same way Miami was. Now, obviously, the Heat had the benefit of they saw him go off in that game seven, but, you know, a big test for the defense is can they get back out to the Celtics shooters? And at least for one game, I think they did a good enough job of it.
Milwaukee doesn't have Swift afoot. Right, guys to close out. It's Wes Matthews. Giannis is the guy. Even Middleton's not like fast. Jimmy and Bam close space really, really quickly. And I mean, we saw with the Jimmy block on Tatum and all this. I mean, those guys just close space quickly. But, you know, Milwaukee doesn't swarm the way Miami does. And, you know, I think I think a drop is good. Miami had to drop against Philly.
I thought Dedmon had some good moments in drop last night. Like, absolutely. That was one of Dedmon's best games in a long time as well.
But if you're going to drop, you need to show that second guy at the top.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what they weren't doing in the first half. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he's just getting by guys and they were, you know, like, it's okay to help off Jaylen Brown. And the other thing I was saying was you don't need to put Jimmy Butler on Jaylen Brown because they ended up putting Max on him for some time. And if Jaylen Brown wants to isolate Max Strus, you're like, okay, as long as you're not getting other guys involved, and you know, we can manipulate help to make that difficult, but it's better if Jalen's doing it than Jason. And if you're going up against Max, who's about his size, I thought the other interesting thing that Miami did in the first half, and I thought a lot of things were trending well their way, even when the score wasn't good. Miami wasn't just giving Boston matchups that they wanted, and there were a couple plays where, like, they'll put Derek White in a pick and roll with Bam's man, whether it was Grant
and or, Bam won't switch.
Bam
right.
won't switch that because he's like, ah, because they would do that in the regular season. They'd switch that action immediately, and then they would just kind of pivot and swing the ball, and then Tatum gets to run a pick and roll without a Bam switch, and then Bam's, you know, over too far away at the top of the key, and he's not really in the play. Miami was disciplined in that, and that's not easy because, you know, you're like, okay, we're not switching this, we're not switching that. These are the Clark situations where we switch. That's stuff that you need really high IQ guys to run. Because in reality, listen, in our everyday job, if we had a fucking list of conditions when we were and weren't allowed to do stuff, we'd have to check a piece of paper that we'd have sticky noted onto our computer. And these guys are just like, okay, this is what we're running. And it's contrary to what they've done all year.
No, that's such a good point. Like the discipline, particularly in the second half, was there. And I like that. One of my biggest pet peeves in the playoffs, soft switches, off-ball switches, switches when guys aren't even setting screens. Like in the playoffs, you'll see two players run by each other and guys are like, all right, that's a switch.
Oh, all the time.
All the time. The Rockets in 2018, famous for that. and that bothers me. I don't like it. Like, you know, Bam, what he did off the ball, I thought that was one of the best games he's played in his career. Yeah. That's how good he was defensively in this game, particularly in that third quarter. And he obviously, you know, he had the blocks. He had that possession on Jaylen Brown. But what he was doing off ball, denial, it was just fantastic. It was high level, high stakes, high leverage moments. And he won almost all the battles. And going back to Strus, who you brought up, I thought he defended Jaylen Brown. There's the one like in the paint turnaround fadeaway, I think Jaylen Brown hit over Strus.
Tough shot.
It's a tough shot. And like Brown's a talented player. He's more than capable of making it. But I'm with you. Like to a degree, I think you live with that. You rather die with that than Jason Tatum living at the rim.
The other thing, Ro, is that I think people think, I'm sure Celtics fans are like, Jimmy hit a lot of tough shots over Peyton Pritchard, right? It's not the same because Max is about Jaylen's size. That's an actual contest. There's no contest, right? Jimmy's just doing kind of his footwork and his moves, and he's shooting what is an open jump shot because that guy's just not getting a hand up anywhere near enough to bother Jimmy. It's all, I mean, and you see players say it all the time, too small, too small, too small.
Yeah.
There's a reason why that stuff matters, and they put him in 16 pick and rolls courtesy of Nikias Duncan, who wrote a great piece for the Basketball News, and Miami scored over a point per possession on those actions because, of course, you're just going to win. And, Ro, I've said this all playoffs long. And this goes back to the Maxi game that he had against Miami in the regular season where he hunted Hero. There's a difference between guards hunting guys and power wings hunting guys. Because if a guard's going to hunt you, a guard's typically going to hunt another guard that's about his size, right? If it's a big guy, it's different. But, you know, if in Miami's case, it's like, okay, guys, guards hunting Hero. It's different when it's a guy like Maxi and when it's a guy like Kawhi, LeBron, Jimmy.
Of course, Tatum, yeah.
Strength. I don't even think Tatum's as good at it as those other guys because of the playmaking. Because when you send the second guy, and I think
historically, yes, I do think Tatum's playmaking second half of the season playoffs has been really good. He had a couple games in that Milwaukee series. He didn't have the shot going.
Yeah.
Boston or Brooklyn series as well. Like he was racking up the assists. I mean, he had a lot of assists in the first half. That's what they took away also in the second half.
Yeah, Miami was Miami
the
had
help was a step faster. Yeah.
Like six assists at the half to 16 field goals or something.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. So it's I'm with you. It's interesting. To me, the question is, I think the big question with Jimmy was, can he hunt switches? Because during the regular season, I don't think the Heat were very good at hunting switches. Like, that was not a good facet of their offense. You remember that Dallas game, like, Jimmy was going up against Kleber and getting stonewalled. Like you said, it's different going up against guards, hunting smaller guards and switches. But to me, that's been kind of the most impressive thing of this run for Miami for me is, I mean, we all know what Jimmy's done offensively. That fadeaway shot he hit over Tatum, I tweeted this, I didn't think he had that shot in his game because it was not a shot he hit during the regular season. It's not a shot we've really seen him hit the last 2 years. The mid-range game has not been very good for him. It failed in that Milwaukee series, and the improvement there is just – it's shocking, frankly, because it's been so good and kind of so out of left field. It's been fun to watch.
Masterful troll job by Jimmy.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch Trilly was tweeting out clips of just like Jimmy and the like those one-legged jumpers, and you're just like a November against the Magic, and you're like, what is he doing? Yeah. And then you're just like, oh yeah, no, he knows when it matters. Like, and they were the one seed despite that. Like, they know.
Yeah,
they know. And those games, you know, and they had that blow up. None of those games matter. I mean, they matter, but they don't matter, right? Like those moments of effort and stuff. You know, I don't think that this team should have ever been questioned for giving a fuck or whatever, but. Great stuff from we'll talk about Jimmy's kind of offensive package. Just want to bookend the defense. I thought the other thing that was huge for Miami was they tried to, Bam just being absolutely incredible. And the Celtics tried to use different screeners to get Bam out of actions, and Bam that put Bam in help positions. So they would have Rob Williams in the dunker spot, and that's an easy rotation for Bam. And I thought that was another mistake that the Celtics made that, you know, okay, we're just going to screen with Grant Williams and we're going to put PJ Tucker in a pick and roll, which is not like, I mean, when that's like your freaking alternative, that's not fun either. Because now you have like PJ and Jimmy or PJ and some guard, and then Bam's coming to help on that rotation. And now he's, you know, we don't think, I know that Bam probably, I think maybe more casual fans think of Bam as like a shot blocker, but that's not really his role defensively for Miami. And he became one yesterday because the Celtics were like, okay, we're going to get you out of the pick and roll. And he's like, all right, bet.
Yeah. It's interesting because I also think they were having a lot of success with Robert Williams in the dunker spot. I mean, he was getting a lot of points. I think Rob Williams finishes like a +5 or something like that that game. He was really good. I don't want to turn this into people get mad at me when I compliment the Celtics.
But no,
I
thought
Rob Williams was fantastic. And
he was really good.
I mean, his closeouts, talk about closeouts. He was closing out on shooters. Like, I was, like, falling back in my seat watching him close out on the shooters. And they did have some success, I think, in the first half particularly, because they were not able to contain the triple penetration. finding Rob on those little dump off passes. So that to me is the Heat had good moments defending that. They also had bad moments defending that. And I'm interested to kind of watch that battle continue in the series moving forward. Cause I do think Boston has something there, particularly when, you know, I tweeted this when Hero's in the game. The real question is, what's he going to do when Tatum's in the game and hunting him on switches? Because if Hero does get beat and, you know, Williams is in the dunker spot and your guys are collapsing into the paint, that's opening up those lobs. I mean, he's a fantastic
in the first half
finisher. Yeah.
Literally, that, you know, Bam had to step up because, you know, right. Somebody got beat and then somebody else made a mistake and Bam has to come up and Tatum made a really good lob pass.
So that's something to me that they can't, I don't think that they can say, like, we have the answer for that. That's cut and dry, et cetera. Like, that's something I think they need to keep an eye on moving forward.
They didn't overreact to that, though, because Tice had a couple as well from Pritchard in the short roll.
Right. I mean, they did a great job in the second half, I think, playing with more intensity, being crisper on those rotations, making the passes more difficult, making the catches more difficult. That, I think, played a big role.
Swarming the catch, that was the other thing. Like, whether it's – and I thought they did a good job of, like – and I would love to ask Spo this if this is like, okay, Gabe goes low, PJ arms up, right? And it's the guard always swiping low, and whoever else is on the play is hands up. And it just makes it hard because you either strip him on the way up or when he brings the ball down, like Hassan used to, and if you're not getting the foul call. It's not like Embiid – where it's just too much strength and too much size. Rob is a little different. He's a little more explosive vertically, but just not as crafty and all that stuff. So I think they just bet on, okay, and they did not do that in the first half. He was not getting two bodies on the catch.
There was no pressure. No pressure at all. Yeah.
I mean, Miami was just monsters getting turnovers in that game, which juice. Yeah. And now, I said this pregame, Ro, that – their turnover game is going to be the thing. And I don't remember if we talked about it. Their turnover game has to be really important for them because their half-court offense, I think we had questions about it, despite them putting like a 104 or what was it, a 110. It was something crazy, offensive rating in the half-court, while Boston put like a 76 or something. But their transition game was incredible. It was incredible last night, and it came from plays like that, swarming the ball. I tweeted out the two that Jimmy had both those steals, kind of overplaying Tatum. The Gabe Vincent strips on Rob Williams, you know, all that stuff. It's not even charges this time. It's live ball turnovers.
Yeah, that's going to be a massive, massive kind of subtext to this series. My colleague, Michael Pina, who's in Miami, I think asked Spo about the transition game and the post-game press conference. It's something that he's kind of identified as well. Like, that's going to be huge for both teams. I mean, think Tatum had, what, six turnovers in that third quarter?
More turnovers than assists.
We'll get into their half-court offense and what I think is sustainable and what is not, but I think moving forward, like, they can't count on getting that half-court performance every single game.
No.
That and getting those turnovers. I mean, they're also probably not going to get six turnovers in a quarter from one player again, but that level of defense, that attention, like, that is going to be their path to victory in this series if it exists, because that to me is going to be the best thing they can do for their offense is to get out in the open court.
They force, I think, the third most turnovers in the league, and that's just what they do. And that's another area where Lowry helps them a lot. Just really good at it. But Jimmy's just, you know, I know that I've said this before on the pod, but, you know, at times Jimmy can be – we used to compare Kawhi. Remember when we used to say, like, you can't dribble around Kawhi because he's just getting a hand in there? Jimmy at times is like that. Like, you cannot pass the ball in his vicinity because he's just going to get a hand on her and make your life hell.
I mean, he had the two steals. He had the knockaway on Grant Williams. It was fantastic.
He's a monster, man. Yeah. He's a monster. Yeah. He's become the apex version of what we thought in our wildest dreams he could be.
That's true.
I mean, this is Kawhi. This is like literally like the stuff Kawhi was doing in the run for the Raptors. Like, I watched that run very closely, as everybody knows. It's literally it's what it is.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, offensively, he's on a low. The efficiency, the two-way play, he just is a menace defensively. I mean, he was him and Bam in that third quarter.
It's a menace
all over the floor.
That's the vision.
Yeah, yeah. That was the idealized version of this team. Now, can you get it for 48 minutes every single game? No, I mean, the other opponent is doing things to take that away. But that was the idealized version of this team, and it was incredible to watch.
Let's talk about their offense a little bit because I thought there was a lot of interesting things. First and foremost, Spo showing that you are not going to dictate what we do. And I thought And what I mean by that is Grant Williams on Bam and Rob on PJ. And Miami wants to screen with Bam because they want Bam's verticalness, and they know that Bam's a non-shooter, so the spacing's a little funky. So by putting, you know, Williams on PJ, you're encouraging either PJ to screen for him, who is a lesser screener, and you're shrinking the court because, you know, Miami's going to want a big and drop. And Rob, I don't know if it's the knee or what, not really switching yesterday, was dropping, and a pretty deep drop at that. Wasn't like an Embiid drop where he's a little higher up. It was pretty. I mean, I thought Hero got
Hero had some looks that he smoked. Yeah, agreed.
Like wildly good looks. Yeah, and I rewatched them. I was like, I cannot. And Pritchard, who, by the way, I gave a lot of credit to in the regular season, I thought did a great job of fighting over those screens. No airspace for him at all.
Yeah, he died on a couple of.
Yeah, was just late every time, and Hero was just stepping into wide ass open threes that he was missing. But Miami kept that going, and that was a little encouraging to me. And they just kept, you know, it wasn't just attacking switches; it was attacking that. And Miami went, okay, we're gonna set PJ screens, and we're gonna run PJ dribble handoffs. And PJ's a great short roll passer. And when PJ's rolling in space, because Boston loves to hug shooters a lot more than Miami does. Miami loves to fly off of them. Boston hugs them a little tighter and will rotate a little later because, you know, they wanna cut that lifeline off for you because they have a legit shot blocking big. So PJ's in short roll, somebody's coming to help, and PJ's. Boom, picking that apart really well. And it was almost like, suppose like, no, we're going to do what we want to do, whether it's Bam or PJ. You can't dictate that. And he did that rope against the Lakers in the finals when they put when they put Anthony Davis on Jimmy Butler and they put Dwight Howard on Jay Crowder. And they were daring Miami because, I mean, the Jimmy AD thing was untenable at times. And Miami's like, fuck it. We're just going to put Dwight in pick and roll. We're going to run Duncan and Jay Crowder DHOs, and we're going to force you to take him out. And it worked.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. Like the secret sauce to the Celtics defense has been they put Williams on in a position where he can roam, right? They put him on kind of a so-so shooter. I mean, Tucker, I know, is money from the corners, but teams are still kind of willing to leave him for a reason if it's a pick-your-poison type situation. And I think that they were effective in taking away what Williams does best, which is – you know, cheating off the corner, being in that roam position, being allowed to go wherever he wants on the floor. You know, you kind of have to put him in actions, even though he's a very good defender. And I think when healthy, is a fantastic switch defender. You know, when Boston's healthy, they have like six guys where you can't really find a mismatch, which we'll get into. But yeah, I think they did a good job of, like you said, not letting Boston dictate that by playing on their own terms, by letting Rob kind of do whatever he wanted on that end of the floor, because he can be really destructive if he's kind of able to, if his assignment is to just kind of move freely about the half court.
They find the way that they want to attack, and they will, and for a team that doesn't have a great half court offense, they have a lot of ways to get what they want, which is just fun. It's just really, Ro, the rim pressure that they don't generate is just truly at the core of everything. And if Jimmy's going to get to the basket at will, and if Depot gets to the basket enough in non-Jimmy minutes, and that's why I thought the Lowry injury might be a little too much for them to overcome, because he just gives you a little bit of off-the-dribble shooting and a little bit of, not that Lowry's turning the corner on the pick and roll like he used to, but he's giving you enough dribble penetration to survive when Jimmy's not on the court and not hurting you, and you can kind of buy your, and he's just a great pace
controller. And he's a drop beater. He gets them out in transition. I mean, that game, the one time they beat the Celtics this year, that fourth quarter, it was all Lowry, Bam, pick and roll. And I still think they're going to need him to win this series. I think if the next game he's out for game out two, game which two, is the 19th. The game three is the 21st. That would be, I think, almost 2 weeks since he last played.
Yeah, but he played in the middle of that, and I don't know if that set him
no,
back.
So he played like the 8th, yeah. And I think that was the last game he played was the 8th, because he didn't play the last two games of the Philly series. So he had a two-week break between the Hawks game and the Sixers game. Would the 13 days be enough? I don't know, but it would be nice to have him back in Boston. I just don't know that it's tough, because Gabe is giving them solid minutes. I almost wonder, like, do you bring Lowry off the bench? Do you play him limited minute? Like, how do you?
I find saw a that way to floated around, and somebody in chat had asked us that.
I don't think it's the worst idea. I really don't. Or at least just bring him on the court in non-Jimmy minutes, even if you're only playing him 13 minutes a night. If he's able to be effective in those minutes somehow, I really don't know. But it's a tricky situation for them because I do think they're going to need him in this series once Boston gets healthy as well.
I think ideally, you know, Oladipo is supposed to be that plug gap for that.
Yeah.
You just need something because they ran a lineup yesterday. It was like Deadman, Oladipo, Hero, Gabe, Caleb, or Gabe Max. It was kind of that lineup with no Bam, no Jimmy. And it was awful. And I know it was to buy a couple minutes. It was awful. And then they started the quarter. They put Bam in. And those lineups just don't look great. Oladipo's numbers have looked really good with Jimmy, by the way, which have surprised me.
I think Depot's had moments like he's able to come around, like fly off a pick and get into the lane. The shooting just has not been there. I mean, he hit one.
He got good looks last night. That's the thing.
He's got to hit the corner three when he gets it. He's got to hit the drop three when he gets it. I mean, that's going to make a huge difference. What a like godsend he's been with this Lowry injury, because I don't know what they do if Oladipo's not there. Because even if he hasn't been great, the fact that he's not an absolute disaster, I mean, I honestly don't know what they do if they don't have
the
him
lineup
right
data's
now,
so. Good. The lineup data is good. They are very, very good when he plays, especially when he plays with Jimmy. Now, I don't think they'll need that this series, but you know, I think you expect them. I mean, I think even Game 3 is presumptuous for Kyle. I think this might be like a Chris Bosh situation. Where he comes back really late into the series.
Yeah, it's totally possible. Yeah, it is interesting. Another reason why you want to see his three get going is it would be nice to put him in defensively in certain situations late in game. But you need Max on the floor because Max hit a couple huge threes in the fourth. I don't think those are threes Depot can hit. But if he can get his shot going, I love when they're able to play him, Jimmy,
PJ,
you know,
Bam.
Yeah, PJ Bam, like that's great. So it'll be. I mean, Vincent also hit big shots that I don't think Depot's hitting those shots. But yeah, when they can get Depot, Jimmy, Bam, and Tuck on the court together, I mean, come on, man. Like if they get a lead in the fourth and they say we want to choke this game out defensively, like that would be sick. I would like to see.
They have abilities. They have so many options for that because Gabe, you know, they don't lose us. I think what they lose defensively with Gabe. For Lowry is the ability to guard a little bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know that Jalen has some suspect ball handling, and I think Gabe did a pretty good job on him. Right? If this was Middleton, I don't really know how Gabe can survive a matchup like that.
Right.
Kyle can,
right. And yeah. You
lose that. I mean, like if they play Klay Thompson next round, you know, if they make it and if they win, if the Warriors win, like you want Kyle on Klay, right? That's the matchup you want, so they can play a little bigger on Klay and they can kind of, you know, do different stuff on the pick and roll. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, Kyle's just a special passer too. Like I think Gabe doesn't, and I don't want to criticize Gabe. It's just, Gabe was fucking fantastic. I mean,
yeah, Gabe was really good. He's just, Kyle Lowry's a very accomplished, great player.
Superstar,
that's all
Hall of Fame type guy. How do you like my Fred VanVleet Jr. for Gabe?
That's funny. I like that. I like it a lot.
Has
I mean,
the guts. Although Freddie's a bad finisher, but I think Gabe has a lot of that dog that Fred has. He's like, because I was texting with a friend who's a Celtic fan, and he's a doomer. And he was telling me, he's like, you know, Gabe is just Kyle Jr. It's so annoying. You just come in waves. Like there's always some guy that I don't want to hear from that just comes up and he's like, who is this guy? And he's Kyle Jr. And I was like, he's like Fred Jr.
Yeah, the threes have been – he's been really good all season, and it's held up even in the playoffs. It is funny to me because there was so much talk in Boston about how good Derek White has been and, you know, his acquisition did for the team. And, I mean, I think – I don't know that he's that – like, is he better than Gabe Vincent? I mean, Gabe's clearly a better offensive player, right?
I kind of I was thinking that the other day. And I think I'm going Gabe at this point.
It's interesting. I mean, Derek's really good, and he had great moments in that Milwaukee series, and his defense is really good. Like, I guess if you had to guard Jimmy Butler, I'd probably rather have Derek White on him than Gabe Vincent in a switch. But, I mean, yeah, I just think Gabe's been really, really, really good.
He's been phenomenal.
And that's why, like, people keep getting on me, like, the Heat are missing a starter, too. Like, at some point you have to recognize, like, I'm not saying that, like, they're better off without Lowry, but, like Lowry's been out for so long now, like, they have enough with Gabe Vincent. They've proven that they've had enough with Gabe Vincent. They've proven they could go on a road and close
out. I don't like that because Philadelphia was an unserious basketball team. And Atlanta, I mean, they shouldn't have even been in the playoffs. Like, I don't like that particular. Like, yeah, they have enough. I mean, clearly, like, they're still good. Like, Milwaukee clearly had enough, quote unquote, without Chris Middleton. You know, they probably.
But we can't have it both ways and be like, oh, like, the national media is not taking us seriously because all they want to talk about is Embiid was hurt and Trae Young. But then we can't go back and say this team was unserious. Like, I just think the Heat have proven, like, this configuration is good enough. And they, like, as great as they played last night, they had to get that game. They cannot drop a game one at home
without
when the other
team starters.
Is missing two starters. Yeah, like, you can't.
And they won convincingly.
Yes.
That's they needed to win that way. I know that. And I think people give them a pass for the slow start because of the long layover. I think everyone kind of. And by the way, I would like to say, chat says, row learning real quick. G takes no Lowry slander. 8:30 start. That building was filled. That's all I'm going to say. Just when people don't get it. There's two ways to get into downtown from the highway. It's A36, which is hell on wheels, and it's I-95 South, which is hell on wheels. People don't get it.
Taking 95 South, and people are coming from Broward County. They're coming from Palm Beach. Dude, getting in from Broward on 95.
The Bright Line's a death machine, so you know.
The 8:30 start is clutch, and I just hope the building remains filled.
I wonder if the Heat push for that.
I think it's entirely a TV.
It's the league's thing.
Well, because you need it to start late enough that the West Coast audience can watch
it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm out in California in a week, so I appreciate that.
Oh, it's so much better. It's so much better. You're going to love it.
Oh, and you finished just in time for a dinner reservation? It's actually great. It sounds like it's going to be heaven. I have a wedding out there, so I'm excited for that. A little bit more on Miami's offense.
So can I tell you my fear?
Please. Well, can we? Is it a negative? Can we get the positive and then we get it to negative?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I want to keep the energy up. It's a big win for Miami. They used Jimmy in a lot of different ways. And I think this was the most utility way I've ever seen. They used Jimmy as a ball handler, as a screener, but like a lot. Like sometimes they'll sprinkle in like a little Jimmy roller as a treat. They did that shit all the time. There was a play that I tweeted out. It was like Jimmy screen, pick and roll as a handler, flows into DHO, then rolls to the empty corner, and then goes to they like ran like a billion different
actions. They probably left points on the board because I think Vincent and Hero didn't do a good enough job. When Jimmy was slipping screens,
oh my God.
They didn't do a good enough job finding him.
Kyle would, though. That's my thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't want to like bag on Hero. At the end of the day, he's a young player. He's improved a lot. Sometimes the playmaking, like when he ran that fast break and they didn't score, I wasn't surprised. When he's missing, like that's where, even though the assists have gone up, and I see people, I think we talked about this, like people try to throw out like, oh, like Hero is getting blitzed because they're so scared of him. Hero is getting blitzed because teams feel like they can take advantage of his vision, of his lack of playmaking ultimately. And he
the
had
same
good
way that
he
do that with Tatum, by the way.
Yeah. But I think over the course of this season, for example, Tatum's improved a lot. You've seen and he has advantages. I mean, he's 6'8". He can look over the defense in a way that Hero cannot. But I mean, again, my colleague Michael Pina wrote a great article about it. Like their offense kind of took off when Tatum's passing took off and the number of assists he had per game took off. And against a good defense like the Heat, it's going to be trickier. But that's an improvement he's made in his game. And Hero is going to have to do that consistently and effectively if he's going to beat these coverages, and the Heat need that from him. He can't be missing Jimmy on those slips, and et cetera.
I think that they've even programmed him to be not mistake prone because it's just a disaster if he turns the ball over a punch. Because at the end of the day, especially without Lowry, they need him to handle, and they can't have him be frazzled. So I'm sure he doesn't have liberties. And I don't know if you remember, Gogi used to be like risk averse. Like he would never try to get the ball into a tight window as a passer. Yeah. He'd rather just like, oh, fuck it, I'll just float it up because Yeah. As opposed to Dwayne, and that was a big thing when Dwayne came back. Dwayne's like, ah, fuck it. It's YOLO time, baby. You know, I'm doing this behind the back through the window and it gets turnover. You know, the only time
Dragic was willing to take a risk when then there was like they needed to make an inbounds pass with no timeouts. And he said, sure, I'll throw a 6-foot arcing lob to Jimmy Butler. This can't go wrong.
He was in the building.
Why is that play not out of the playbook? Why is it? Why did I still see it this season? Dragic was in the building.
Yeah, last night he was with his son. Yeah. He was wearing a Heat Dragic jersey.
Oh, I love that.
They had to win. Man, I love him so much. I know that it was the right thing not to bring him back, but I hope he finds a way back. You know, yeah. I mean, I think Gabe clearly would have just played over him. Although Gogi was really good for Brooklyn, so.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe moments. Not really good, but he was very productive.
Yeah,
very productive. But going back to the stuff, Jimmy just a menace, all facets. You know, the way that he was able to, you know, when they made the finals, it was a hunt kind of mentality. It was looking for George Hill and putting him in pick and roll. It was looking for Kemba Walker and putting him in pick and roll. And it was looking for KCP and putting him in pick and roll. And that's just been the formula for him. And he's a guy that I know he doesn't do it as much as we liked in the regular season, but come playoff time, I think Spo is as apt and as like, okay, this is the game plan. We're doing this. Whether it's attacking a drop specifically or attacking those kinds of switches, they have been all postseason. You know, when the Hawks tried to play drop with Collins, like, oh, word? And they went at that. That was like, okay, guys, this is what we're going to run. And we'll do like these three variations of this kind of action. We're going to put this guy in double drag at the bottom of the screen. And they just go boom, 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 boom. Oh, you're going to play this guy? Bring him up. And there have been plays where Deadman's going to come screen. And Jimmy goes, no, out, out. He points at Gabe. He's like, get over here. That's the shit I love to see.
Yeah, that's really good. So that brings me to me, what's the inflection point of this series? Because Smart is going to play. And I know people are dubious about him winning Defensive Player of the Year. At the end of the day, whatever you think about Marcus Smart, he's an accomplished isolation defender. I mean, he was guarding Giannis Antetokounmpo and giving Giannis.
I saw Drew Holiday put him under the basket multiple times.
I just think it's not that Jimmy is not going to win that matchup at times, but
it's not going to be as easy.
It's not going to be as easy. And when the Celtics play Smart, Brown, Tatum, one of the Williamses and Horford together, I don't know who the weak link is to attack.
It's Horford in the half court. No, that's easy. They can't. If Miami's win condition is play Horford out of the court because they drop him against Miami.
Yes, but he's held up on switches really well so far in the playoffs.
You need to get him out of there. No, you need to get him out of there.
I agree that that's what they need to do, but I'm telling you, he's so far in the playoffs has been really good on switches. And if they get him off the court and it's Rob or Grant, I mean, that's also, or they could go small and put Derek Wright on the court, go Derek, Smart, Tatum, Brown.
No, they can't. Derek, Grant Williams. Derek's another guy that can't live. Like if the Celtics win, it can't be with Derek.
It's,
I could be wrong, but
that's the thing is it's that, listen, they'll have to prove it, right? Yep. That's where the mano-a-mano thing comes in, is we can sit here and look at the statistics and say, you know, X player should win over Y player in this matchup, you know, 8 times out of 10, but it's easier said than done. And they have some really accomplished defenders on that team, and they can also play multiple styles. I mean, they had success in that Milwaukee series going small. Grant, as annoying as the flops is a good defender. So it's not going to be easy. It's what I would caution Heat fans is, if you're worried, if you see the offense stuck in mud the next game, wondering what's the difference, it's that having Smart back gives them such better rotational flexibility. I mean, they played Neesmith. They dusted off Neesmith in that game. Like going away, that's like the equivalent of the Sixers putting
Gary. He gave them fine minutes.
He did, but I mean, that was a huge win for them, those minutes that he gave them. I'm just saying that it's going to be interesting to watch that battle play out, because when they have Smart back, their defense turns into a whole different beast.
So my thing when they get Smart back is it shifts to a more Bam series, because what they really don't have an answer for, especially if they can get, you know, Rob's man up top, is having Bam screen and slip. because of the way they hug shooters. And if they start forcing those rotations out of the corner, you know, you can do a lot of fun stuff. And that's how you open up the offense. But that's a Bam thing. And that's a thing that they're going to need Lowry to trigger that pick and roll. I think they could do it some with Jimmy. He's just not the playmaker that Lowry is in terms of like getting the offense like triggered the way you want it. And that was my concern. But if Jimmy's going to do this, and if they're just going to, you know, if they go back to Jimmy plus bench mob, right, against those smaller Celtic units, which I think Spoelstra has done a good job of kind of manipulating the minutes to be that way. And if they can get that production out of Bam offensively, that's the recipe for them to win. Whether they get there or not, I think has a lot to do with Lowry's health and has a lot to do with can Horford get back on the court because of, you know, I don't even know what's going on, if he's vaccinated or unvaccinated, and that I think changes the how soon you can come back or what are the conditions. Smart, I imagine, is going to play, maybe not 100%. Although PJ has the ankle thing now, right? Well, he wasn't on the injury report because he's a crazy person. That guy, man, he was born to play here.
I said it and I'll say it again. He should have his jersey retired before the next round.
He's amazing, dude. He's just so heat. That building loves him.
Yeah.
They love him.
It's crazy that he's only been here 1 year, because I think he's already one of the biggest favorites.
Do you think he'll end up like more of a favorite than like Walker or GP?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Antoine has like the shimmy, which is like forever.
The shimmy was good, but the problem is that team, we don't need to get into this. I think the Heat messed up the first 7 years of Dwayne Wade's career. And I think that they did something that the Lakers have done to an extent with LeBron, is they found a way to win one title, but they haven't been able to build something sustainable. And the unsustainability of that team, the volatility of it, and how quickly it all fell apart, I think sours a lot of the memory of that 06 championship. As great as Wade was, like the fact that they got swept the next year and then 2 years later, 15 wins, like the fall was so dramatic and so quick that I think that's why a lot of those guys, as fun as they were in the moment, Jason Williams,
We love J-Will.
Exactly. But they don't really get as celebrated as most title teams would, because of just, in retrospect, how weird that era of Heat basketball was.
Chat says, yeah, he's like Birdman 2.0 with the hype and hustle in terms of PJ. Birdman's another one that everyone loved.
Who doesn't love Birdman? It's so funny because that entire season, Spo was like, the answer's in this locker room. We're not going to sign someone off the street. And nope, they won that finals because of how good the Bird at center lineups were playing with Bron and the three shooters on the court. I mean, that's why they won the 2013 finals.
Well, I remember when they signed him, my dad is like, who is this guy? And I said, he's another one of the carousel of centers. He's probably not going to play when it matters. Boy, was that wrong. I'm wrong a lot. I'm bad at predictions. But I have the same concerns as you do. That's why I've been a little more timid on this series than I have other series. It's just and Krishna of basketball, of the B-Ball Index, told me that Miami is like second or first in PPP, points per possession, when attacking switches. They just don't do it conventionally with isolations. That was a wild stat to me.
Yeah, that's shocking to me.
Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
That shocked me that he said that. Yeah. He's like, yeah, our data says this. And I was like, that's fucking wild. But he prefaced it by, it's not conventionally against isolation, which I guess makes sense.
Yeah.
Because they're just not a good, I mean, other than Jimmy kind of, you know, busting people, it's not, yeah, I mean, I imagine it's a lot of Bam slipping and just kind of manipulating offensive rebounds. Because, I mean, for a while, they were a really good offensive rebounding team. So I think that's where we are. Before we kind of transition to one other thing I want to talk about, what do you think are the adjustments that Boston can make? Because I think Miami right now is playing from a position of strength, and they still have a card to play, which is Lowry. And they have a couple things that they can do. But what if you're Boston, you know, do you just kind of stick to your guns and just play your guys? Or is there an adjustment that you think that they need to make?
I think they're going to be more aggressive taking advantage of Miami's help. I think that's going to be on Tatum and Brown to find the shooters who are one pass away, because they're going to have those opportunities. The Heat are going to be aggressive helping off shooters. You saw what the Celtics did to Milwaukee, right? And I think that's going to be kind of how they try to play this next game. They have to be more aggressive getting the ball out to their shooters. It was weird how much Peyton Pritchard played in game one. I know part of that was smart, but he was in that fourth quarter for way longer than I thought he would
be. I think they needed the shooting is what they needed.
Yeah, but so that'll be interesting. And Smart coming back is going to help them a lot because I don't think the Heat's game one offense is sustainable with Smart on the floor. Like, it can still be good, but it would be nowhere near as good, in my opinion. So that, to me, is their big card to play as well, because I think Smart settles them down a lot in many ways.
On offense, too, by the way.
He brings the ball up the floor. He's the point guard.
And Tatum's off ball more, and I think that it simplified Miami making him a playmaker by him having to trigger the offense as opposed to him kind of coming off a screen or just doing secondary stuff.
For sure. And yeah, Smart's going to have his opportunities to go one-on-one against certain guys as well. I mean, he can go one-on-one against Hero. He'll have opportunities to go one-on-one against Gabe Vincent. If he's also getting dribble penetration, and now you're cheating off Tatum, and we saw Jimmy have the block, but that's easier said than done. Yeah. So they have some cards to play as well. I think they're going to be better on both ends of the floor.
I wonder. So Miami, I think, is pretty clearly a rotation wing short. Caleb just doesn't look healthy. And
he's not been the same player, which is tough because I thought he was going to be a big part of the playoff.
The Achilles thing is just like brutal. I mean, what a horrible. And I know they don't list that in the injury report, but like, he's not been the same since the Achilles soreness, and he's lost. He had a dunk yesterday, and I was like, I don't remember the last time that guy dunked, and it was like not an above the rim dunk. It was like it was sad because he was so good for them. He's a guy that I think you want more defending guys like Steph and Trey, not wings, which I think that's become clear too. So they're a wing short. Yeah. You know, a lot of people said backup four. They just need like a 3-4, not a 4-5. You know what I mean? Like,
a 3-4. But like, they need like the diet version of Jay Crowder to bring off the bench.
Well, they have better Jay Crowder. You know, let me ask you this: somebody, my Celtic friend, he's like, how much better is PJ than Jay Crowder? Like your version of Jay Crowder? And I said about 30 to 35% better. Am I shortchanging PJ?
I think that's a lot.
Because Jay was really good.
Because Jay has also been this version of Jay on the Suns. His help defense, his shooting, like he. I don't think he's as good of a screener or passer out of the short role as PJ's. But I mean, I thought Jay was fantastic this season and such a big reason for their success. And that this current version of him on this team, like, would also be really, really good.
But I mean, I think PJ's better than – I think what Miami got out of PJ
– you think they're similar players, but yes. Like, Miami's asking PJ to do different things. And probably, like, I think PJ has a little bit more versatility, which helps. But, I mean, Crowder –
I think PJ's a much better on-ball defender.
Yeah, but Crowder, I mean, in that series, like, they had moments where, like, their only offense was him, like, beating Luka to the hoop. And I think, like, he has that in his game. In a way, PJ does not. Like, PJ is getting floaters, but he's not going one-on-one.
The
like
PJ push.
Crowder, yeah, but Crowder has that. Like, he can go literally, like, we're really desperate. You have a lesser defender on him, he'll take him to the hoop.
We saw that in the Lakers series. You know, there's a lot of Jay going one-on-one with whatever small guy that they had out there. I mean, but PJ's been so good in every I was always scared when Jay had to defend a switch, like a guard or a quick guy. PJ just doesn't – it does not matter. He's just a fucking dog. But yeah, I think those are the cards to play. I think for Miami, you know, you're a wing short. So those non-Jimmy lineups, so those Bam Depot lineups, I think they've signed a soul search what to put around that. And I think that's been the biggest question in the postseason, you know, without Lowry. It's like, okay, what do we surround Bam, Depot, Tyler with? Because you want to survive defensively, but that's also like not enough offense if Tyler's not like really, really good. So you're just kind of like hedging. They played three guards yesterday. It was awful. Yeah. Even Jeff Van Gundy was like, this is way too small.
Yeah.
It was a disaster. And then they pulled the plug on that quick and they brought in Caleb and Max, who are guards light or wings light or whatever. So I don't know. Is there a solution there? Or is it just like, man, they just need Kyle back to
I mean, that's why Alf gets on me when I say so-and-so won a quarter, even though they lost it. Like the playoffs are about managing your weaknesses. That's what the playoffs are about. It's managing your weaknesses. They have to manage those minutes when Jimmy's off the floor. They're not going to have good options when Jimmy Butler's off the floor. Like, that's what it comes down to. So, you know, that's what they got to figure out. There's, it is what it is. Like, you just got to find a way to stem the tide. Like, to me, I kind of lean on, like, can you get enough defenders in those minutes to at least make it a mud fight?
I don't think they can because it's Hero.
But that's the thing, is it's like, at the end of the day, Tatum and Brown were on the floor, and the Heat only lost those minutes by 3 points with Jimmy off. You live with that. Like, you live with that because you're not going to have good options in that moment.
The thing that I look at, so Oladipo was only -6 yesterday, which a lot of that was in that really bad run with the three guards, which wasn't all his fault. Deadman was +16, which is interesting, and I want to see how that kind of continues to play. Yeah. So he's been really good against Boston just in general. But they need that little something, and the story of last season was Jimmy on +7, Jimmy off -7. And the same the year prior, it was Jimmy on +7, Jimmy off +0. And they were surviving non-Jimmy minutes. This season, it was like +5 and +5. They were just fucking good all the time. And that was because you always had, you know, Lowry or somebody, or you kind of had enough.
Lowry and the shooters,
yeah. And that's kind of what floated your team. And now in the playoffs, I think it's super obvious because, you know, only good teams, rotations are short. So let's just see. That's the one thing I want to look at. Yeah. I think game two, not a must win, but man, if you really win that, you know, you just, you take control of the series and you still have your ace to play, which is getting Kyle back in the lineup.
For sure.
So that's where we are. I know you have a little something coming.
There we go, my man.
Huh? Yeah, a little something coming. Yeah. What do you got for the people?
Shout out to everyone who's made it this deep into the podcast, but for everyone complaining that there's not enough national media attention on the Heat, stop watching First Take. Stop watching Get Up, because there are other national media outlets covering the Miami Heat. I talk about the Miami Heat on my podcast, Open Floor, for Sports Illustrated every week. But more importantly, I got a story with Max Strus dropping ahead of game two. So everyone, check that out. Again, you want national Heat coverage, this is it.
What kind of story? You profiled him?
A mini profile, just about how, you know, they put him into the starting lineup. They've had success with him since. What Max has done well. I spoke to his first college coach, his coach at the Lewis Flyers. Shout out to Scott Trost. Very nice of him to spend some time with me. Some stories about Max in college in there. So, again, for people like, where are the national Heat stories? I have one for you. I don't want to see anyone complaining. I want to see you talking about the Max story.
What can you give us, like, one cool detail to, like, get people to go that's in the story?
I was like, how did you improve on defense? Because we know you can shoot threes. What did you do to improve on defense? And he was like, PJ Tucker has been in my ear every single day. And he's like, I lean on PJ. He also once scored 52 points in a college game, 12 of 14 from three.
That's a lot of points. At DePaul? Yeah.
At Lewis College. So, yeah. Some tales in there. But, yeah, he told me about the moment Spo told him he was going to be in the starting lineup, what that moment was like. So some interesting stuff in there. I think Heat fans are going to like it.
He seems like super personable.
He's a nice dude. I could tell he was in playoff mode. He was locked in. Stupidly he wasn't ready to in. Have like a, exactly. He wasn't ready to have a big, nice long chat with me, but, definitely locked in and a confident guy. I asked him about the switches. I asked him about the defense, and I think he gave some interesting answers people are going to want to read.
Did you get anything about his friendship with Jimmy? Because they have one of my favorite dynamics on the team.
I asked him. I was like, what does it mean to you to earn the respect of a guy like Jimmy? So you'll have to see the story for the
check
answer.
Out that story. Check it out. SINow.com.
SI.com.
SI.com. The Twitter at SI. Why is the Twitter at SI now?
I don't know. It's like one of those things where they made the Twitter like 20 years ago or whatever it is now. It's and it's marketing. Like for something. Yeah. Yeah.
Just whatever. Yeah. Go to Sports Illustrated SI. That's so cool that you fucking write for sports. The most decorated sports publication that we have. And you are the best profiler. I'm like
that,
not even joking. Like, you are the best doing this right now.
I would not go that far, but I appreciate you, Johnny. Well, I really do.
I'm telling you what I think. I mean, honestly, the guy right now who's the freaking GOAT of writing is Dan Devine on The Ringer, because he's the guy that's actually carrying the national Heat coverage. That guy has more guts than any other national writer. That dude has been pounding the Heat drum. I remember there was one day that somebody's like, yeah, nobody writes about the Heat. And he's like, not me. I was like, let's go. That's our guy.
Yeah, man. Dan's killing it. Shout out to Dan. He grinds too. He's got a lot of stories out there, man. He's a great dude also.
I'm going to read you the headline of Dan's story today. Can Jason Tatum get on Jimmy Butler's level? That's the stuff I want to see. Yep. That's a headline, baby. Yeah, I'm clicking and retweeting. I don't even have to read it. I'm retweeting.
That's guts. That's absolutely guts.
Check out Rohan's story. Everything that you write about the Heat and everything in general is crazy. But I don't like reading the Lakers stuff. But the Heat stuff. And you have a Panthers hat on today. Go Cats.
Go Cats. We got this, you know.
I don't know much about hockey. Are they a home seed? Do they have the – I know that
they're the number one seed.
They're the number one seed. Oh, just like the Heat.
Yeah, they lost their first game, though.
Does home court advantage mean something in hockey?
Less so. Hockey seeding also means less, but, you know, hey, we'll see what
happens. Do they reseed or no?
I have no idea.
I don't know how we're South Florida. We don't know how this works. We're here for the ride. Yeah, we're here for the ride. Check out everything that Ro has to offer. Check out us on Playback in about 15 minutes. I'll put the link in the chat again. Make sure to join us. You know, always slander me. You can slander me in person. What's more fun than that? Check out Hangover Time post game after every single Heat game. And again, the Weird Alf pregame show 30 minutes before every day. Mixed Bag hosted by Tiffany Meeks. And of course, Needles to the Groove by Siobhan Bessel. You guys are the best. Let's go Heat. Let's go Cats. And let's go Liverpool. We're one win and one Man City loss or tie away. So go Reds.